Okay, so we're gonna begin and say, how come you can't smoke weed in New York State? Everybody was for it, but it didn't get done. Now you've come out and you've said, hey, I got a better idea. If we can't do it, if those people in the legislature can't do it, why don't we just decriminalize it? So can you explain what decriminalization is and whether that's going to happen?
Yes. If we just provide a little context to the listeners, lest they be misled by the negativity of the question.
Yes, I agree.
Right now, we are on track to have the most successful legislative session, I believe, in modern political history. You look at the list of what we have accomplished, no legislative session has done this. There was a moment for change that we were presented with, like with marriage equality, like with gun safety, and we seized the moment. Progress for women, progress for the LGBTQ community, gender, Roe v. Wade, farm workers bill, finally, that farm workers bill. I started when I was at HUD working with the farm workers, Kerry Kennedy. We were married at the time from the RFK Center, where I worked with Cesar Chavez, and she was very deeply involved with the issue. My daughters have been raised fighting for that issue. They're now in their 20s, and finally the farm worker bill passes. I mean, so this really is a moment in history. And I understand journalism, and let's go to the negative, but when you're 99% historic, to just start with the 1%, the greatest climate change bill in the United States of America, right? So, marijuana, that is a politically difficult issue for the legislature. It's a controversial issue on a number of levels. I think the Senate worked hard, Senator Krueger. I think the Assembly worked hard, Assemblymember Crystal People Stokes. I thought it should be done in the budget, which I said to you on your show many
You did.
times. The legislature didn't want to do it, and I politically, they don't have the votes. You know, they don't have the votes because they didn't pass a bill. Rent, they could pass a bill. Many issues, they could pass a bill. They didn't have the votes. The decriminalization, though, is also historic because one of the real crimes, pardon the expression, the social crimes of marijuana was that it victimized black and brown generations with convictions that then hurt them for the rest of their lives. And it was enforced in a discriminatory way. And we know that. So the decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana, less than an ounce, is a major, major step forward. It's not legalization, but it is decriminalization. And it's a major, major accomplishment.
So it sounds a little evasive. Sorry, Governor, to put it to you that way. How much responsibility do you bear for not, negotiating with them to the point where they were going to do what you wanted them to?
This is not a, there wasn't, you can't, it's not a negotiating issue, doctor. It wasn't about the revenue. It wasn't about anything. You have members who have conflicting opinions on legalizing marijuana. And then you have police groups who have many questions, and you have questions on who sells it and how are they regulated and how do we make sure young people don't get it. So you just had members who have valid conflicting opinions. And it is a big change. And politically, you didn't have the support. They didn't have the votes. You know they didn't have the votes. It's not a question of interpretation because on all these other issues, they passed what they call a one-house bill. The Senate passed it, or the Assembly passed it, or sometimes they passed a two-house bill. Here, they couldn't pass a bill in either house because it is complicated. I said, let's do it during the budget because then a member can say, well, I voted for that measure in the entire context of the overall transaction. And it is easier to pass tougher measures in the budget. That is a fact. And I pushed for that. The legislature said, no, let's do it separately. I said, I think that's a mistake. Because when you isolate just that issue and it's an up and down on that issue, that's a tougher vote to take on a controversial issue. And that's the way it wound up. Decriminalization is also not easy, but it does a lot, makes a major change. It makes the situation much, much better, especially for the black and brown community that has paid such a high price. Mm-hmm. But politically, the support was not there to pass legalization. Senator Krueger, Assemblymember Crystal Peeple Stokes, I'm sure will continue to work on it and come back next year, as will I. But this is the best that could be done in this session, which is in and of itself a major accomplishment. Remember, I tried to do decriminalization 5 years ago. And I was unsuccessful. I tried again. I proposed it again in this budget and was unsuccessful. So after 5 years of trying, this is a major accomplishment.
So are they on board?
I believe we will pass decriminalization. Yes, I believe we will pass that.
Now, you're in overtime, OT, right now, as I understand it. And in other words, everybody's supposed to go home, but they're staying a little while longer. Can you explain what's happening there?
Yes. Part of it is just the volume of bills to pass. Again, the 99%, which is the story, the sexual harassment bills, the gay panic defense, the climate change, the volume took more time than expected. And also, you know, they're supposed to leave Wednesday. They never really leave in the middle of the week. So when it's Wednesday, you have Thursday, you have Friday. And I think it was volume. The only outstanding issues that we're still trying to work through, prevailing wage bill, the assembly does not want to pass because it has no immediate effect in New York City. It calls for a study in New York City on the prevailing wage, and the Assembly doesn't want to pass the prevailing wage bill. I think the Senate would. On solitary confinement, there are reforms that we all agree need to be made. Seriously mentally ill person should not be put in solitary confinement. We need to protect people. Yes, we have to run the prison system and we have to run a jail system, but it has to be humane. And there's no doubt that there are reforms that have to be made. I said that years ago. The state was sued by civil liberties groups advocating prisoners' rights, and they were right. And I refused to defend the suit. I said, they're right. Just make the reforms. On the other hand, there is a theory of spending statewide about $1 billion in building new jails. We don't have the $1 billion, and we'd have to figure out where to get the $1 billion or just send that bill to the local governments, which would be the unfunded mandate of all time, or we'd have to renegotiate a budget. And frankly, I don't want to build $1 billion worth of new jails. I'm proud that we've closed more jails. I'm looking for alternatives to incarceration. I want to spend money on education, not incarceration. So we're still working through solitary confinement. The prevailing wage bill, I don't believe at this time, is going to pass because the Assembly was quite clear that it didn't do anything for New York City, so they didn't have much of an interest in passing it.
Believe it or not, there are some people out there who don't know what prevailing wage is, and I think our job is to make sure everybody knows everything. So what is prevailing wage?
Prevailing wage is a wage that the state sets primarily on construction projects that says if a project gets government subsidies and support, it should pay this prevailing wage, which is a wage that the state sets as a fair, livable wage that pays benefits, et cetera. The flip side is when you set a high prevailing wage, you raise the cost of construction of the project. Right. And if you raise the cost of construction too high, you could actually impede economic growth. And that's the yin and the yang on prevailing wage. the bill that we had would change the prevailing wage on government projects on Long Island and upstate, but not in New York City. And the assembly then basically said, why should we pass it? We don't have any interest if it does anything immediate in New York City. That's a rough statement, and their position is more nuanced. But at this hour of the morning, when nobody has slept for 2 days, that's the crude expression of the bottom line on prevailing wage.
So let me ask you something. I want to go back only for 1 minute to the marijuana. I live in the great state of Massachusetts with a great Republican governor. My question is, we've got a lot of money coming in here now from New Yorkers. You see New York license plates all over the place. In theory, that's the name of the place, you know, in Great Barrington. Lines are around the block. We're getting that money. Doesn't that hurt you a little bit? Because you're always looking for money.
I supported legalization. I proposed it last December. I proposed it in my budget. It's New Jersey proposed legalization. It fell in New Jersey, and the political support isn't here. I agree with you. I said it's an artificial distinction. There is legalized sale of recreational marijuana. It's right in Massachusetts. And in this part of the state, that is very proximate. So, yes, I support it. I think it's a mistake. I think we've lost revenue. I think it's a failing of this session. And that's why we lose a point and we're only at 99%, Doctor.
Okay,
I also am not going to, because I'm going nice to you, I'm not going to challenge you on your characterization of the great state of Massachusetts and the great Republican governor of Massachusetts, who happens to be a colleague and I work with and I'm fond of. But I'm going to let that go because I'm being especially nice to you today. And I just want to note that.
Sounds
niceness.
That way. Okay. Sounds like if everybody knows one thing about you, you're a nice guy.
That's exactly right. As I just demonstrated, I wanted to point it out because I'm not sure you have fully appreciated my capacity for niceness.
You make a point.
And you advocate when you have to, but that's what I get paid to do. I get paid to fight and advocate for the people of my state.
That's interesting. The great state of New York. That's interesting. So the theory is that if you're fighting to advocate and you appear as not always the nicest of people, that's okay because you're fighting for your people.
The nice is not nice if you're not fighting for your people. If you didn't fight for the LGBTQ community and for women's rights and for gay panic and for surrogacy and for climate change and for farm workers, I don't think you're really nice. I think you appear nice because you're complacent and easy and malleable. But I don't think you're nice. Nice is really help people, deliver for people. You know why this session is going to be so outstanding, Doctor? Not just because we proposed nice things, but because we got it done. And that's been the failing of the Democratic Party, and that's what progressive Democrats have to understand this year. It's not enough to propose and promise. You have to make a change in people's lives or you have done nothing, and you're not really nice. You can't be a progressive unless you deliver progress. And it's not really nice if you don't deliver the progress. You may look nice. There may be the apparency of niceness. But you're not nice. You failed, and you didn't help people, and you didn't help farm workers, and you didn't help the LGBTQ, and you didn't help clean up the climate. So you're not really nice. You're just complacent.
I hope that if somebody who is writing a biography of you heard that, they wrote it all down or that they're going to write it all down because, you know, it's germane. Now, let me ask you this. Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, have you evolved on that? Have you changed on that?
No, we had the highest goals in the nation. And I believe climate change is the issue of our generation. and of our of you talk about of the moment. I've seen it. I've felt it. Superstorm Sandy, Lake Ontario, 7 feet of snow in Buffalo. You turn on your TV. First acknowledge the problem and then transform the economics of society so that society can be sustainable and not just in vague promises. We should have a Green New Deal. Yeah, I know we should have a green world. Who can get it done? It goes back to the nice point. It's nice that you talk about the green economy. How do you do it? New York is doing it with a real plan, real investment, real transformation plan, training new workers, bringing in new businesses, and moving to renewables in a way that you can actually reduce the carbon footprint, not by pure aspirational niceness, but the niceness of actually delivering a product and making change in society and people's lives. That's our climate change. The debate on the bill were basically set-asides of use of the money for directed communities that may or may not really serve the environment. If we're going to have an environmental fund, my point was make sure the money goes to the environment.
So I'm interested in this. So the greenhouse gas emissions elimination will be 30 years. Is, you know, I know that you've announced on this show that you're going to run for office a fourth time, but 30 years, that's a long way out. So how realistic is that? Is there risk of a backlash when the energy prices for consumers likely increase?
No. First of all, we had the highest goals in the nation. California was a lead on this issue. If you actually looked at the goals, our goals were more aggressive than California. This law codifies that. But we were already the nation's leading. And yes, 30 years is a long period of time. That, and it could seem a period of time that is unobtainable or unrealistic. That's why I say, look at what we're actually doing today to make that goal real. We're investing more money than anyone else, doctor. And not just wishing the transformation to happen. We're investing in the renewables. We're about to announce a project off Long Island, multi-billion dollar investment for wind turbines that bring those businesses here, that train workers for that industry. Because you're going to have to transform the economy. You can't just say we have to get out of fossil fuels without saying what you will move to. You can't have candles power society. So, yes, transfer power plants, but where does the renewable energies come from? I fought and won to close Indian Point nuclear power plant. Where does the replacement power come from? And that's where the rubber hits the road and where government actually becomes relevant, and the difference between political aspiration and governmental performance, between rhetoric and reality. And we are making those changes now. That's the difference. It's not a goal. It's a goal plus an action plan based in reality that we are implementing today, because I may not be here in 30 years.
You might not.
But judge me on what I'm doing today.
But then again, you might. Let me ask you this. Your council's statement on the green light bill, which will allow undocumented immigrants to apply for driver's license, you say you would trust the Attorney General's recommendation the bill contains safeguards to protect the information being turned over to ICE. In other words, you collect it all, you let people, you give them the driver's license, the feds come in, they swoop in, they get the list from you, and then they go and arrest everybody. But the statement from Alfonso David, your counsel, pointedly said the Solicitor General has remained unresponsive on this critical issue. Whoa. Number one, I can't believe he said that without your telling him to say it. Number one, what was that, a shot at the Solicitor General? Number two, has this question since been addressed?
Driver's license I said from day one, I supported it. Eliot Spitzer proposed it back in like 2007. I was attorney general. I supported it. It was very controversial at that time, but I supported it, and I have since. So I've been on record before anyone on this issue.
Okay.
There are two questions on driver's license: your political intent, and then the legal effect. Is a parallel to everything we've been talking about. The political intent is undocumented people should have driver's license, public safety, et cetera, plus the benefits to them from an deportation point of view. That's the political intent. The legal effect then becomes a different question. California passed an undocumented law. Their federal government accesses the DMV database that they collected to aid in deportation. We then start a driver's license program. We say to New Yorkers, you can now get a driver's license, come in. What happens when the federal government sends a subpoena right. and says, give us the information? Did you now inadvertently turn over a database that the federal government can use for deportation? God forbid. That's the legal question. And that is a germane and ripe legal question because California is now in litigation. It's a very difficult area of the law. You have a president who's running for president again, re-election, saying, I'm going to deport millions. And the lawsuit was inevitable, as you've seen. The lawsuit has been promised just 2 or 3 days after the bill was passed. You have county clerks who are saying they're going to turn over the list of people who come in to the federal government. You have county
and you
clerks
also have county clerks who won't comply with the law to provide licenses.
Yes, so there is going to be a lawsuit. The question became, what happens when there is a lawsuit? I get the politics. Do we win or do we lose? That question was posed to the Solicitor General, which is the Appeals and Opinions Office of the Attorney General, and the Solicitor General's job is to offer opinions. The Attorney General responded that she believes the law has sufficient safeguards and it can be defended. I said, based on the representation of the Attorney General and the Solicitor General, that they can win this case, fine, I'll sign the bill, and I hope they're right.
Are you at all I mean, after all, the Attorney General was your sort of preferred candidate, the Solicitor General, somebody you like. Are you at all dissatisfied with them right now?
No. The Attorney General rendered an opinion. The Solicitor General, who's a subset of that office, a separate position, but their opinion is they can defend the law and they'll be successful in court. We're going to find out because the court case will commence immediately. And I think the public will be informed of that and everybody will understand the status of the situation. And I think the court case is going to come fast and furious, as it did in 2007 with Eliot Spitzer. So I've seen this movie, Doctor. You know, there are very few new movie plots. They just changed the actor to a younger, more attractive one. But I've seen this movie in 2007. The words came out of Eliot Spitzer's mouth, and a lawsuit started. And that's why I was involved as the Attorney General. So we passed the bill. The county clerks have said they're going to sue. They're not going to enforce it. There's a county executive in upstate New York who says they're going to sue. So we're off to the legal races. And there'll be, I'm sure you're not going to see a phalanx of people filing into DMV offices to sign up for the driver's license until they know whether or not it's going to be turned over to the federal government. So it didn't take long, and that's where we are. The court case, my guess is, may be protracted, but we'll see what happens.
You've been trying to get your budget director, Robert Mujica, appointed to the MTA board, despite the fact that he lives in Columbia County, which is not in the MTA service area. And then there are those who think that it's, you know, sort of conflictive in that will have two jobs and he'll have more power on the MTA board than the other people. Why can't you find a board member who meets the residency requirement? How can he do both jobs at once?
The residency requirement, what is the point of the residency requirement? Because we want someone on the MTA board who understands the MTA board. He has a house in Columbia County. Robert Mojica is a New York City boy. He was from Staten Island. His family's from Staten Island in the Bronx. He spent his life commuting back and forth. I now am in Albany, but I'm a Queens boy. I know Queens, and I know the MTA. I've spent a life there. Rob Mojica knows more about the MTA than probably anyone who has ever served on the MTA board. So he knows what the point of the residency requirement is accomplished for Robert Mojica. I would put his experience with the MTA against anyone's on a personal and on a professional level. No one can compare to what he knows about the MTA. It's also one of the greatest investments for the state of New York. So as budget director, it's totally correct that he should be on the MTA board because it's a state-subsidized authority. He's also on the CUNY board, City University of New York, misleading name City University of New York because it's actually something like 95% state subsidized. But the MTA
still
is probably
in the city.
The largest. It's in the city, but it is a state subsidized entity. People think it's city subsidized. That's the consequence of the name CUNY, City University, versus SUNY, State University.
Governor, in all deference, I never thought that. You said people think that.
You never thought the City University of New York was paid for by the city?
Not in the old days it was, but now I always knew that the state paid because I was up here watching the negotiations.
How much would you like to wager that if we call 20 people and say, who pays for CUNY, City University of New York, the vast majority will say New York City?
Well,
then why isn't CUNY called SUNY?
Well, because SUNY is called SUNY.
But
SUNY,
what is the difference between the State University of New York and the City University of New York? Why is there SUNY and CUNY if they're both paid by the state?
Ah, come on. You know the answer to that. State University are all those campuses up in upstate, and City University are all those campuses downstate. I mean, I used to teach at the John Jay College. I know about the City University.
Oh, well, that's why you know, because you taught at John Jay. But why is it just State University of New York all across upstate? Why isn't it the North Country University, the Western New York University? Why does only SUNY in New York City get a totally separate name?
Beats me.
Yeah.
Beats me. So, okay, so let's go on here. Let's talk a little bit about now that you've defeated me on the field of battle here. there's a gay panic. You passed the gay panic defense, getting rid of the gay panic defense. So what do you think that will be the real impacts of the bill? I kept thinking about that. Do you really think that the juries would buy the idea that, oh, my goodness, I killed him because I found out he was gay and I went into a panic?
Yes. Otherwise, why would you have it on the books as a valid defense? It was a codification of homophobia. It was repulsive and repugnant. And how it existed for this long in this state is frightening.
What brought it on? I mean, did you have a sense that people were really using this all the time and getting away with it?
No, but it was there. Many of these things are not used all the time, but they are codifications of inequality. And that's what this is. On what theory would the state of New York say, you can go use as a valid defense, I found out the person was gay, I was in such a state of extreme emotional distress that I shouldn't be held fully liable and culpable. How can you justify that?
So do you have a long list? Do you have a long list of people who did that and got away with it? I mean, it seems insane to me.
Yeah, I know. Fine, then take it off the books. Same issue with surrogacy. We won't pass, and that's unfortunate, but I'm going to continue to fight for. You have an LGBTQ couple or an infertile couple that you now gave the right to marry. Good for you, state of New York, marriage equality. They want to start a family. And medical technology has evolved where a woman can carry a fetus. And a woman is willing to, and in 47 states it's legal, and in this state it's not legal.
But some women don't want that. They say that that's basically buying a woman's body.
Yeah, well, then I say, how about a woman's right to choose? Which we just argued for Roe v. Wade.
And if you say a woman's right to choose...
Women are incompetent. So you're saying, under our law, the woman... In 47 states, it's legal. So it's not like you're going to stop the practice. You're just making New Yorkers go to one of the 47 other states. But in this state, we say the woman must have an attorney. The woman must have a health counselor. The transaction will be supervised by the Department of Health. The woman can't be in dire financial economic conditions. But you still believe the woman is not competent to make that decision.
Well, what about to take the transference? We only have a half a minute, but the same argument can be made for prostitution. Let the woman decide.
And then fine, then let's debate prostitution.
Well, what do you think? Are you for it?
Let's have the debate.
Yeah.
I don't want to debate with you today because, see, I'm being nice to you today because I know you're a little under the weather. So I don't want to push you too hard today, Doctor.
It's wonderful to talk to Governor Andrew Cuomo. The next time when we get together, I'm going to ask him a question. There you are, living in the mansion where your father lived. I wouldn't want to live in the apartment where my mother and father lived. I just too many memories. We'll ask him that the next time, so stay tuned.